could the Republican convention move to Jacksonville this summer? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. And just ahead this morning, why the local Republican Party is pushing to have the GOP nominating convention here in Jacksonville. We'll go to your calls on this in a moment. It's 549-2937. Then later, as calls for police reform grow in America, we're hearing those cries in Jacksonville, too. We'll speak with public safety analyst Ken Jefferson on what that might mean for local law enforcement. But first this hour, statewide, the Florida Department of Health has updated its COVID cases to 58,764. That is a one-day increase of 1,317 cases. There are 2,566 deaths across the state. In our area, we have 101 deaths. Now, amidst that ongoing pandemic news, the Duval County GOP is renewing its call to bring the Republican National Convention to Jacksonville this summer. And the reason this is even in play is because of the COVID pandemic. Here's what happened. President Trump said he's pulling the convention out of North Carolina because that state's governor, a Democrat, would not permit a full capacity gathering due to concerns about spreading coronavirus. So what chance might Jacksonville actually have to land the event? Dean Black is chairman of the Republican Party of Duval County, and he's on the line. Dean, thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. So where do things stand right now with Jacksonville's bid to host the RNC? Other Florida cities, Orlando in particular, have also expressed interest. How much of a chance is there?
An excellent, excellent chance. We think that Jacksonville is clearly the best city in the entire country to host this convention for a number of reasons.
What are those reasons?
Well, our COVID transmission rate, to your point earlier, has been remarkably low here in Jacksonville, and that in a state where it's been held at low levels as well, and it's been exemplary, a model really for other states and other nations even around the world to follow. So we have very responsible leadership in that regard. But more than that, Jacksonville has the capacity to do it. We also have a demonstrated ability to have peaceful protests. And unfortunately, that's a consideration these days. We also have uniform, unified Republican governance and a welcoming business community and a downtown that's second to none.
Now, Mayor Lenny Curry has indicated if Jacksonville wins this bid, he would like to see ViStar Veterans Memorial Arena host the big event. Let me ask you, though, Dean, about logistical concerns. For example, Tampa spent a good 2 years preparing to host the 2012 Republican convention, which nominated Mitt Romney for president. How could you pull this off in such a short time frame? And you mentioned COVID-19. Critics of this idea have said it could spread cases if thousands of people flock into the city. And they're worried about protests as well, not just local protesters, but people coming in from around the country or even the world to protest here. What are your concerns there?
Well, so to your first point about logistics, that's actually an argument for why it should be in Jacksonville. Look, this is not just any other average city. This is Jacksonville, Florida. We have a demonstrated record under this mayor's administration of dealing with great enterprises with limited notice. We've been through two hurricanes, COVID-19. We've had protests. And every time we deal with it in a responsible manner, I have absolute faith in our city's Republican leadership to handle this challenge responsibly, considering all of the factors that need to be considered. There is no better city anywhere in America to do this. This is not just any other city. This is Jacksonville, and we are a great city.
Do you think the president and the National Republican Party will hear what you're saying, given that other bigger cities are also vying for this event?
Well, certainly Jacksonville is receiving due consideration, and if I have anything, and if the Republican Party of Duval County has anything to say about it, they will certainly hear our voice, and I know that Mayor Curry is making sure that all of our voices are heard as well.
And one last question, Dean. In a minute, we'll speak to someone opposed to this. What about the argument critics of this move are making that this would draw large and globally watched protests to Jacksonville and that the economic benefits might be outweighed by the negative attention?
Melissa, that is patently ridiculous. Of course we want to be able to host the Republican National Convention in Jacksonville. It will be the largest thing to happen to our city since the Super Bowl. We could very much use the $100 million impact at a time when our businesses very much need it. Absolutely, we should want to host this. It is a great opportunity for Jacksonville to showcase what a great city we have across the nation and to the world. And again, we have responsible leadership here. We have highly capable governance. We will manage it responsibly, and it will be a great success. And it really shouldn't even be a partisan consideration at all, Melissa. Everyone who cares about and loves Jacksonville should want this for our city's sake.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us. He's Dean Black, chairman of the Republican Party of Duval County. Keep us posted, Dean. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa. Have a great day.
Now another view. Jacksonville resident Richard Borders started a petition this week at change.org against bringing the Republican convention to Jacksonville. Borders cites concerns about spreading coronavirus, and he also says he's worried the RNC coming here would draw the largest protests in the history of this country. The petition is closing in on 2,700 signatures. Richard Borders is on the line now with more about his take. Richard, good morning.
Morning, Melissa.
Good to have you. I want to say full disclosure, you used to do some video production work here at WJCT, and we've known you for many years. Why'd you decide to start this petition?
Well, working with you is one of the things that drew me to Jacksonville, and it's the best place I've ever lived. I love the city. I agree with Dean that this is an incredible city, and I agree that our mayor and our sheriff work very hard and do so much work in handling so many events at once. I've spoken to them about that while they're on your show. But the one thing that I don't agree with him is that I was around in 1968. I wound up having to sound for protest and saw riots and got in the middle of riots. There's a city in New Jersey called Asbury Park. They had a riot that took them 40 years to recover from. All the businesses were burned out. After this last weekend, it was a very small protest that turned into a small riot, comparatively, because it was localized. If you're bringing people from all over the country and world, not only one philosophy of Black Lives Matter, but many philosophies of both parties, it's a perfect storm for a conflict.
It's 549-2937 to join us. So you argue on your petition that you're afraid Jacksonville would see the largest and most contentious protests in the history of this country if we hosted the RNC here at the Vistar Arena. Let me ask you, just playing devil's advocate, what if the Democrats were to do the same? Would you feel the same way if the Democratic convention were looking at coming here instead of Milwaukee, which is where they are scheduled to be this year?
Well, I think this year, any city, it has the possibility of having problems because people are so divided in this country. I'm not speaking politically. I'm speaking just as a lover of Jacksonville and someone who wants to see our area maintained. And we had this small protest and small riot, but we've had a lot of business burned out. Our downtown area with the Florida Theater and Mosh is so incredible and creative that I hate to put it at risk. And I think the risk outweighs the benefits on this. The RNC, I mean, different things have ways of getting paid. And I understand the economic impact it would have, but losing our city and seeing other cities in the past, before there was social media that people could get to areas they wanted quicker and faster and organize quicker. This is in 1968. The possibility is so much greater now that I hate to see the city put at risk.
Yeah, certainly memories, even though it's been 50 years plus, memories of the 1968 convention, that was the Democrats in Chicago. People remember that well. The violence
there.
You were there. Now, that said, we heard from the local Republican chairman a minute ago saying he has confidence that the city's law enforcement and government could handle protests. What's your response to that?
Well, I compare it to a whole other event. I was involved in planning Woodstock. I had been on tour and knew how many people were coming. And they said, well, maybe we'll have 20,000. I said, no, you're going to have a lot more. You have to repair. There was 500,000 people there. Could you imagine 500,000 people converging on here ready to protest or anything? I'm just going on past experience and past wisdom of my 72 years here.
Right. And so
I don't know.
And I'm looking here. And looking here at your petition, you do focus on the protests. That's your big concern. Are you concerned about the spread of COVID as well? Because when we put the question onto social media, we're hearing a lot from people saying they're concerned about that too, packing a lot of folks into an arena and into the downtown footprint. That's why North Carolina is losing the convention, because they don't want a full capacity event.
Well, I consider that an understood fact. That's a fact. I didn't put it because I was worried more about the protest and the violence of the protest, but that's going to happen either way.
Let's go to some calls now. Where do you stand, folks, on the push by the local Republican Party and the mayor to bring the Republican National Convention to Jacksonville? North Carolina is losing the convention because they cannot come to terms with the Republican Party on how to manage the event in this time of a pandemic. They do not want a full capacity event. So let us know what you think. There's a real chance that we could host the convention, at least by what we're being told today. We are one of the cities on the list. 549-2937. David is in East Arlington. Hi, David.
Good morning, Melissa. I share the concerns about the protest and the violence potential, but the mayor has demonstrated a willingness to suspend civil liberties in order to control that. But what the mayor and the governor of Florida have not done is a willingness to suspend some civil liberties to do what the scientists are telling us to do to prevent the pandemic from exploding again, and that is basically surveillance testing, contact tracing, and isolation for 14 days, and following that up. So I would suggest that if the Republican National Committee really wants to come to Jacksonville, that they pick up the cost of doing the testing, the contact tracing, and the follow-up isolation for all the people who participate both inside crowds and outside crowds. This will be a chance for the RNC and the Republican Party to demonstrate that they do, in fact, believe in science and the use of science to make good public policy decisions.
All right, David, thanks. Richard Borders, we have seen two types of protesters in recent weeks, anti-lockdown protesters and anti-police brutality protesters. What about David's point there?
Oh, I agree with him, but I think the perception of both to me, is not worth the risk. Like I said, there's no assurance that giant crowds can be controlled. We had trouble with a small crowd, like I said, locally, controlling it once it got out of hand. And stores were damaged. There were losses. But it was limited. And there will definitely be, in groups of people, there's definitely a chance the pandemic will spread. I mean, we're in a time of just such incredible division, even within ourselves, on what we feel like want to do and what we have to do. And I just worry about the city totally, whether it's the people, whether it's the pandemic, whether it's destruction of our city. And like I said, I love the city like everybody else here, I think, does. I just want to see it maintain its balance.
Let's go to, and I'm going to get a few more calls on Tamara in Arlington. Hi, Tamara.
Hi. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
I just want to say that I am in total agreement that it is not a good idea to host this convention in our city. I love our city. This is not a political issue to me. I consider myself to be moderately conservative and liberal, and also liberal, but there's a middle of the road, and I just don't think it's right to put our law enforcement at risk for their lives. I have friends that are in law enforcement, family that are in law enforcement, and they are the ones who are going to take the brunt of this, and there's definitely going to be riots and protests. And the COVID aspect is also just, it's too great a risk. We are at a point now where we're starting to come back to life in our community. Let's just be us.
Tamara, thanks for your view. Anthony in North Jacks has another view. Hey, Anthony, good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I'm a lifelong resident of Jacksonville. I'm an African-American male and a lifelong Democrat. However, I have to say that I've got a lot of faith in our mayor, Curry, and our governor, because they've served at least this part of Florida very well thus far. I agree that logistically there's a lot of things that need to be considered health-wise and managing those large crowds, but I think it's something we should at least give them the opportunity to present us a plan for, because it would be great for our city economically and open mind. At least give them a chance to give us a plan.
All right, Anthony, thanks. Richard, would your mind be changed if the local officials presented a plan that addressed all of these concerns?
Well, the problem with that is they don't really have enough time to come up with a solid plan for an event that would be this big. Like I said, I've worked on major concerts and event planning, and you can't do things in the matter of time we have to do this right now. If they could come up with a plan, I'll definitely listen to it. But, you know, best laid plans of mice and men. You can't plan for 500, 600,000 protests.
You think it would draw that many people?
As I've heard and seen people run, people are traveling long distances to protest in local areas. I believe people are going to travel from all over the country for this, on both sides. And I think that's like a perfect storm for what could be a very dangerous situation. You know, I don't know how many people who are listening have actually been or lived through a riot where I had a band, I had drag people in with a priest wiping their eyes with tear gas on a peaceful protest. There's a lot to deal with. And, you know, I've seen a whole city like New York. I had to drive through it during a ride to do a show with Jimi Hendrix. And that city burned down. And could you imagine the entire downtown area in flames? I don't want to. I hate to be a doomsayer, but you have to take every precaution as far as your citizens and your city is concerned.
And we are getting so many calls. What a hot topic this is. So many emails, tweets, Facebook comments. Let me get a few of them out there. Paul emails us, the local Republicans are being delusional. There is no way Jacksonville will qualify of a convention of this size. Remember, during the Super Bowl, we had to bring in cruise ships because there weren't enough hotels. Orlando will get this, he says. I guess we'll have to see. Here's a tweet from the Urban Core. The Trump campaign owes cities and police forces all over the country millions of dollars for past due bills. They've got to pay those cities before we believe we won't get stuck with the bills here. Jacksonville doesn't have the cash. We can't afford this. This wouldn't be paid out of the president's personal funds, mind you, although some people have pointed out that he does have a well-documented history of not paying bills and cities that have hosted his rallies. But this would be paid out of the Republican Party's coffers. So I do want to make that clarification. Lots of comments on Facebook. Mark says, I'm not even worried about this. Jacksonville doesn't have the hotel capacity to compete with Orlando. Mike writes on Facebook, it would be awesome for our local economy. Let's take a few more of your calls. We heard earlier from Dean Black, the chairman of the Duval Republican Party, as they lobby to bring the Republican convention to Jacksonville this summer. We are on the list now that it's being pulled out of North Carolina. We're speaking now to Richard Borders, who's opposed to the idea. He started a change.org petition against it that is already drawing thousands of signatures. Nell is in St. Augustine. Hi, Nell. Go ahead.
Hi, Melissa. Yes, I'm the chair of the St. Johns County Democratic Party. Since the idea has been floated about having the convention in Jacksonville, the Democrats have voiced their concern that I have spoken with at numerous different times about the issues that would come up if the convention is there, but especially because of COVID-19. And one sort of flippant comment was like, well, they'll all come there. They'll spread the virus, and then they'll just take it back to their own states. There is a big concern for the health issues. We still need to be careful. We still need to watch what's happening. And all this is basically is to give the audience that the president is looking for so that he can be anointed on his second run for president. It's an ego thing that the president wants. I think that everybody needs to consider the scientific aspect of this so that we need to know where we stand. I mean, North Carolina, the numbers are still going up. That's why they're saying
that. And yeah, and certainly we saw a big spike in cases in Florida just yesterday now. Let me ask you as a follow-up, exactly. Though. The Republican convention in Milwaukee is likely to be very pared down due to COVID concerns. The Democrats, the Republicans are pulling out of North Carolina because the president wants a full capacity event. But all of that said, would you be arguing against a convention coming here if it were the other way around? And if the Democrats were looking to move to Jacksonville, would you still have the concerns?
The Democrats, normally when they make a commitment, they make a commitment. And when you consider all the plans that need to be made for one of these things. They've been working on this for years on both sides, the Republican and the Democratic parties, for their national conventions. The Democrats are looking at from a point of view, we want to keep our people safe. From what I am hearing right now, it will be a virtual convention. We've had virtual elections of our delegates. They have not been in-person elections. They have been online elections. We now have our delegates in place for Florida, but basically they are trying to do everything they can to make sure that they're not going to be spreading the virus, and who knows what's going to be happening in August. I mean, it may be fairly safe, but it is still, the transmission is still occurring, and we just have to make sure that we're not going to be, you know, promoting it.
All right, Nella. Thank you, Nella. Chairman of the St. John's County Democratic Party calling in there. Richard Borders, I think you've touched on a nerve here. This is the topic of the moment. Lots of calls still waiting.
Well, I just care about the city and wanted to take the initiative to take care of it in any way I can. So.
John at the beaches. Go ahead, John.
What worries me is the first of all the safety of the city, and as someone else said, there'll be hundreds of thousands of people coming here, and it won't stay peaceful, and downtown will get wrecked. But what I'm also concerned about is the total hypocrisy of our government in the city. We can't have big conventions. We've been screaming for a convention center so Jacksonville can become a convention destination. And all of a sudden, we can do it. It's not right. We don't need it. The benefits are far outweighed by the disadvantages and the risks. I don't think we, the taxpayers, should be even thinking about footing this.
Thank you, John. Hey, Richard, here's an email from a listener. What your current guest is saying is that those who threaten violence against any event should win. That is what is happening to free speech in our universities. Is that a good precedent to set? In other words, we should not be afraid of the threat of violence in pursuing large-scale events. Your thoughts there?
Well, there's wisdom and caution. It could go great peacefully and stuff, but I wouldn't want to take the chance of my children or my city or my businesses on that assumption. With the current situation and what we saw just in the last week or so with the protests and riots, there's no indication that it will be a peaceful situation. And I think we were just barely able to handle what we had, and it would be way out of hand before we knew it. And I just hope that wisdom prevails over financial situation.
And, you know, to be clear, if Jacksonville loses out on this, another city will get it and will likely have all of the problems that you're enumerating here. So whether it's Jacksonville or another city, this is coming to some American city, you know, protests, COVID concerns, et cetera.
Well, the city of Orlando actually being more spread out and not having like a localized area, like a downtown area, would be more apt for it and more controllable, because everything is spread out. It isn't like a localized downtown area where everybody will congregate in one area.
I'm going to take one more call. Sure. I'm going to take one more call. It's Dixie in Orange Park. Hi, Dixie.
Hi. My biggest concern is the coronavirus, but other than that, I've been on the planning side of events and wonder where on earth they're going to find a venue. I assume they want indoors, where they could have that many people. I don't know of a venue in Jacksonville that would accommodate them.
Yeah, the mayor has said he would like to host it at the Vistar Veterans Arena. It's slightly smaller than the Charlotte venue that had been slated to host the RNC, but I believe that's what they're presenting as their pitch, Dixie. And yes, I mean, it's not a huge venue, but that if it were to come here, that's where we would likely see it.
It's pretty small for that.
Well, thank you, Dixie. Richard Borders, I just checked. Your petition is up to 2,772 signatures. What is your plan?
Well,
once this petition is run, what are you going to do with those signatures?
Well, what I think there should be is a public forum before the decision is finally made. And I would hope that the mayor's office or the council would have some kind of vote on this. This should not be an individual decision. It should be a public decision, and I would hope then to submit that, ask something like that. I will send it to the mayor's office, and I just want to do whatever I can to keep the city safe. I love the city, and if anybody else has suggestions too, please let me know. I'm happy to take a middle ground. I just want to make sure the city stays safe and prevent something like this from changing it. It will change.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us. He's Richard Borders, video production and music and lighting expert, and a former production hand right here at WJCT. Richard, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I miss Studio 5. I can't wait until we can get there again.
Well, I hope to see you soon. Much more still ahead. Later, bars are reopening in Florida. We'll also look at what police reform means in this city. And up next, how local hospitals are reopening safely. We'll be right back.
The Voidcast from WJCT is a musical journey through Northeast Florida. I'm the host, Void Magazine editor Matt Shaw. Join me while I cut through the digital noise to share handpicked local music stories. WJCT.org/Voidcast.
Electro Lounge can now be heard Monday through Fridays at 10 p.m. till midnight and Saturdays from 9 to 11. Join us at the Electro Lounge only on 89.9 WJCT. Introducing the Jacksonville Music Experience from WJCT, offering music lovers a variety of ways to enjoy favorite artists and discover new genres. Download the WJCT app or visit wjct.org/jacksmusic to start listening today.
Welcome back. Hospitals around our area have a message for the public. They are open and it's safe to come in and be treated. I spoke about it with Brett McClung, CEO of Baptist Health. Brett McClung, a pleasure. Thanks for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
So hospitals are open. They're doing elective surgeries again. Give us a snapshot inside Baptist Health right now as you continue to treat COVID patients, but you're also getting somewhat back to normal in treating other patients.
That's right. It's an interesting challenge. For almost 11 weeks, we really managed COVID-only patients. And so the opportunity when the governor released the executive order on May 4 for outpatient procedural patients to come back in and have the surgery that they had deferred those weeks before creates an opportunity to care for both patients really concurrently. And so in a way, that's not any different than what we always do, which is adhering to strict safety protocols where we isolate those with infectious disease, and in this case it's COVID-19, in rooms with negative air pressure, to prevent the spread of COVID-19. We use designated staff with, of course, an acronym that people now all worldwide understand, that PPE is personal protective equipment, and we also use a company by the name of Xenex, which cleans the rooms that a patient have been in with a xenon ultraviolet light perfectly. And we have that section of the floor or the hospital that we use for those with infectious disease. And then for our surgical areas, we have been very focused on process and on making sure that we're doing the same testing and the same screening for every single person that comes in, and have tested thousands of people prior to their procedure. In fact, so far we've tested almost 4,000 people and have found only four during that screening that has tested positive for COVID before their procedure. Mm-hmm. And obviously they've gone home, and unless they've been sick enough to be admitted, and they've gone home and recovered at home until they were well.
All right. This is all important that the public understands just how hard you're working to make sure that the virus doesn't spread inside your hospital, because, of course, what we're hearing is that people are forgoing medical care that they really need right now because they're afraid of catching the virus if they go to the hospital. What's the message you have for the public that has been weighing some of those choices?
So our public, I think, is listening, and it is learning along with the rest of us, or the facts and fiction of this communicable disease. And what isn't a good idea is to stay home if you're experiencing something that could be life-threatening, cardiovascular, heart attack kind of disease, or strokes specifically are life-threatening illnesses that should be seen immediately and using the emergency room. And it's safe to come in and experience and get that care, as opposed to staying at home, foregoing that care for fear that you might contract COVID-19, and at the same time really giving yourself very little chance to recover from these life-threatening illnesses. And so we've gone to great lengths to communicate what we've done with our community, our consumers, our patients. So when they present, they'll see the signs of that we're asking everyone to wear a mask. And we call that, in healthcare, we can't have a simple name for anything. So we call that universal masking. Mm. When we say that everybody is wearing a mask, both both caregivers as well as patients as they come in, and we provide those if necessary. But it is far better for those that are worried about a symptom or major illness to seek treatment. And we do provide virtual access to primary care physicians through a variety of mechanisms, so that if it's a primary care physician you need to talk to or a specialist, we can make that possible through Baptist Health application, so that you can still have a consult over the phone and not have to get out of the house. But for those things where you've got symptoms of stroke or heart attack, you should go to the emergency room immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Call 911.
Right. Don't hesitate. Thank you so much, Brett, for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Melissa. Thanks for having me. And again, thanks for supporting Baptist Health. And we are changing healthcare for good.
Well, in recent days, we've seen protest after protest in our area. There was one in San Marco last night. Another walk is planned for tonight outside the police memorial building. And the push is to reform police culture and the criminal justice system. What would that look like? What local reforms are most urgently needed? Ken Jefferson is a retired public information officer with the JSO, and he's the News for Jack's crime and safety expert. Hey, Ken, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to have you. You were with the JSO for decades. What is your reaction to the demands of these protesters, in particular calling on JSO to release body cam video of police-involved shootings and other controversial altercations between police and civilians?
Well, regarding body cams and the release of footage, you know, the majority of folks cried out for body cams. They wanted to have the body cams on every officer, the whole officers accountable for their actions, as well as to disprove wrong complaints against officers and just to watch their actions and monitor them adhering to policies and procedures. Now that we have them, there's a lot of legal ramifications that prevent officers from immediately, not officers, but the department from immediately releasing body cam footage. It has to go through a judicial process, and ultimately it becomes the authority, basically if they've got a case, it becomes the authority of the state attorney to release that body cam footage. I know we're in a microwave society and we want everything right now, right then, but it with regards to body cams, it didn't work that simple. I'm certain that once a case goes into the discovery phase, they'll be willing to release all that information once it gets to that point. And we have to understand that it has to go through the system. Now, I'm not trying to defend not releasing body cam footage, because I think it's essential in our sensitive society that we have now, with cell phones and mm-hmm. other things that they have to record incidents. Had it not been for a cell phone incident in a couple of cases that's gaining nationwide attention, we wouldn't be where we are today.
Right. Let me just follow up and ask you, what else do you think JSO should or could do to improve community trust and to work with activists locally and all over the country? We are seeing this movement. What else do you think JSO should be doing?
I don't know if they're meeting with the community leaders on a regular basis or it's just a biannual thing or whatever. I'm not certain. I don't want to misspeak with that. But I think that you have to have ongoing relationships and ongoing communication and be able to listen. Listen to what the community has to say. Be open to listen. That doesn't mean that you have to agree with everything that they're coming up with or all their demands. But maybe you can reach some type of compromise to show that you care about how they feel and what their concerns are. That doesn't make you any less of a police officer or less of a sheriff when you sit down with the community and engage them and listen to the concerns. You know, I could not believe, my wife showed me a photograph of protesters in Paris yesterday, thousands of people who were protesting what they consider to be injustices here in the United States. And I was just flabbergasted to know that another country is
worldwide protests. I want to read you an email someone sent me. There are officers within JSO who have told me they want to heal this divide, but they believe the local police union will never let it happen. Your thoughts?
Well, I understand the role of the union, of the police union, and the police union is there to defend and protect and make sure that the rights of officers are adhered to and abided by, and that they get a fair shake at anything that they may go through. But the union in and of itself still has to be flexible as well. You know, they still serve the officers that the union represents, serves the community. They're out there on the front line every day. Now, you know, if the overwhelming majority of officers and administrators within the organization want to do change or want to do something, they can do that. They can do that. They just have to get together and make up their minds that that's what they want to do. Outside of that, in my opinion, it's just talk.
And let me ask you one final question, Ken. The police culture around America has been criticized for being quasi-military, over-militarized. We saw armored vehicles on the streets of Jacksonville the other night. Does that also poison the well, in your view, or not, when it comes to building a more positive relationship with the civilian population?
Yeah, I witnessed all of that and made comments on some of it. Let's understand this, and let me be clear on this part. Police have to do what is necessary to protect the citizens. Sometimes it appears to be extreme measures such as armored vehicles and things like that. While they're protecting the citizens, they have to protect themselves as well. And this can easily be misconstrued it's an extreme or it's over the top or whatever. But they have to do what they have to do, what is necessary to protect themselves as well as the citizens here in Jacksonville. I don't think that it was extreme because what they did was they became proactive. They didn't want to have to let things get out of hand and then send out for the armored vehicle and all the other equipment that they had. They had it right there. And actually, I'm glad that they did because it helped mitigate a lot of things that could have happened. But because of them being proactive the way they did, I think that that's what stopped it.
Well, I really appreciate your insights. It's good to hear your voice. Hope to see you in person sometime soon, and I hope you'll join us again soon. He's Ken Jefferson. Thank you so much, Ken. Ken Jefferson, retired public information officer with the JSO, and he is the News 4 Jax crime and safety expert. Have a great one, Ken.
Thank you. You too.
Up next, our little calming moment for the day from yogi and meditation leader Dan Nevins. That's in a moment. Also, what to expect as Florida bars reopen this weekend. This is First Coast Connect. We'll be right back.
Hungary and Penn, dedicated to agriculture and culinary endeavors, offering picnic meals in a safe, dog-friendly farm setting where social distancing is top priority. Visit congaryandpenn.com for more information.
WJCT thanks the following business partners for their generous support. McCool Rentals, Anthony's Gourmet Catering.
Many critics of President Trump see his threat to send in the military as a move toward authoritarianism. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Anne Applebaum, who's been writing in The Atlantic magazine about the move toward authoritarianism in Europe and the U.S. Her forthcoming book is titled Twilight of Democracy. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
Since the coronavirus pandemic began, we have heard from so many of you that in an uncertain world, listening to NPR and this station is familiar, that public radio is a constant, even a comfort. The feeling is mutual. We are so grateful that you are here with us. You make the public radio community even stronger when you become a sustaining member of this station. Here's how.
Go to WJCT.org/radio. And thank you.
America feels like it's on the verge, but of what? Lies, conspiracy theories, and false information are running rampant online. Some of those working for the platforms pushing this garbage out are now walking out. I'm Celeste Headlee, the price we all pay for tolerating untruth. Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
A really great technique to disrupt things when they're not going great is just to practice awareness. And what I mean is to notice your thoughts and what you're putting your attention on. There is a truth that where your attention goes, energy flows. And that's a quote that James Redfield has used, Tony Robbins, so many people. It's just the truth. And so what I want you to do is try to notice the next time you're caught up or anxious about something bad that might happen. The what ifs in life that happens, like what if that happens to me or someone that I care about, those moments. Like when you're watching the news or reading something on social media that strikes the fear nerve or invokes the stress response. When you notice that's happening, immediately shut it down, tune out, or turn it off. And put your attention, shift your attention onto what you want to have happen. Don't send your attention and energy onto what you don't want to have happen, because according to the law of attraction, your attention and energy in that direction is conspiring to make that come to be your reality. Instead, direct your energy and put your attention on what you want to have happen and be for it. And when you do that, I promise you'll notice a shift in the way things unfold for you.
Some great advice for the day from local yogi and meditation leader Dan Nevins. Thanks, Dan. Well, finally this hour, after months of closures, Florida bars are reopening to the public this weekend. Some have already had soft openings. Hannah Ferguson of the Volstead in downtown Jax is on the line. Hey, Hannah.
Hey, how's it going?
Great, thanks. Good to have you on the show. So what's the plan to reopen at the Volstead?
So we're super excited that they can finally let us open. The Volstead is planning to reopen on Monday. We're going to take this weekend to kind of get everything ready, figure out setup, menus, and kind of just make sure we're ready to go before guests can come back in.
Mm-hmm. And you've been serving to-go cocktails for a little bit, too. Is that right?
Yeah, it's been doing pretty well. We've been doing a lot of to-go cocktails, pickups, and then for a while we were doing a little bit of delivery for those who didn't feel safe going outside, and it's been helping us get by a little bit.
Now, restaurants in the state have been open for a bit here. Bars are the next phase of reopening. What is the plan for establishments like yours to manage the flow of human bodies so as to hopefully flatten the curve of virus spread?
I mean, I think the best thing we can do is just kind of regulate the flow as far as who's coming in. So just whether that's having someone at the door or just, you know, monitoring the space throughout the day, it's really all touch and go for us, and we'll go from there.
So will you let in a capacity crowd? Are there any restrictions on bars as to how many people they can allow inside?
Yeah, it's I believe it's 50% capacity, so... with the Volstead, we do have a lot of space, So that does help us spread out our tables a little bit more in our lounge area. So that's where we're at right now.
Sure. Now, it's been a tough time economically for small businesses. How has the Volstead managed to make it through?
We had to go down to one staff member, and then we had bartenders who did want to come in and work were working off of tips. So we've been trying to manage. We did a fundraiser for our bar staff where we sold pins, and the proceeds went to our bar staff. We had, like a Venmo where people wanted to, if they wanted to support us, they could send us through Venmo. So we've been trying to keep our team going with the best way we can, and just waiting to see what happens.
What happens? Will your staff be masked up? Are they worried at all about the virus? That's an ongoing concern, of course.
Oh, of course. I mean, we're all worried about the virus. We definitely don't want that to spread. And I know our staff is very concerned about coming back to work, but we all know that safety and our health is a priority. So masks will be worn, gloves will be worn. The whole bar will be wiped down periodically. So we're definitely taking those safety precautions.
And this is happening, the bars are opening up statewide this weekend is my understanding, right? So this is a whole industry coming back to life.
Yeah, they announced that Friday is when bars can open, but I mean, a two-day notice is really kind of hard for us. So we're going to use this weekend to get everything set up. So Monday is our go-to date.
Monday. And what's the most popular drink at the Volstead?
We're definitely well known for our old fashions. They're definitely a classic. So
everyone needs to raise a glass to that. The old fashioned at the downtown Volstead. It's a great place, but I do urge everyone to be safe as they venture out and about. And I want to thank you, Hannah. Thanks for joining us. Hope all goes well. Have a great weekend. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks.
And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. I'm sure I'll see her at the Volstead at some point soon. Along with Josh Torres, show director. He's been known to go to places like that from time to time. Jessica Palumbo is our news director. Bill Bortzfield runs digital for us. And you are a big part of what we do, if not the biggest part. Keep those emails coming to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. We value your feedback. If you missed any portion of today's show, you can catch our replay tonight at 8 or catch our podcast. It's online later today. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Sláinte, everybody. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow and connect with you then.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.